UK Competition and Markets Authority put out another Google search update today, and the AI part is right there in the official description. Search rankings are in scope, so are specialist search services, publisher treatment, and AI overviews. That is a specific way for a competition regulator to say search is no longer just 10 blue links plus ads. It's a ranking system, a summary surface, a traffic broker, and increasingly, the place where an answer gets generated before anyone leaves Google.
And the important detail is that the CMA isn't writing a general essay about AI power. It's talking about conduct requirements. If your business depends on referral traffic, the practical question becomes simple. What does Google have to show you about how your content is used? Can you see whether it was ranked, summarized, or displaced?
Right. The official UK item says the CMA is taking further action to secure a fairer deal for businesses and improve Google search services in the UK. The CMA notice names AI overviews directly, and that changes the search story from ordinary antitrust into something builders can feel. A model-generated answer can keep the user on the platform while still using the web as its raw material. That may be lawful. It also makes the measurement problem nastier.
Because the old argument was already hard enough, did the platform favor its own verticals? Did it demote competitors? And did it change traffic in a way that businesses could contest? Now add generated summaries. The site may still be crawled. The answer may still be influenced by the site. The user may never click. So the dispute moves from ranking position into attribution, traffic substitution, and whether the source can even inspect what happened.
That sits next to the European Commission's Digital Decade Package, also out today. The Commission is talking about structural gaps and investment through 2030 and beyond, and it names computing capacity and AI as part of the gap. So, in one morning, the UK is working through the conduct of a dominant AI-affected search surface. The EU is describing digital capacity as something that needs public mobilization, not just private cloud deals.
I like keeping those separate. The UK is looking at a particular gatekeeper surface. The EU document is a capacity and investment diagnosis. France, in The Guardian's reporting yesterday, is a procurement story, moving away from Palantir toward domestic AI data tools because the dependency itself became politically expensive. Those are three different mechanisms. They rhyme, but they aren't the same policy.
Yes, and that distinction keeps us out of making sovereignty sound like one giant abstraction. France's Palantir story is useful because it makes the abstraction tactile. Someone has to decide which vendor can sit near state data, what happens if access changes, which engineers can maintain the system, and whether the country can explain that choice to its own public. Yesterday, we talked about model access becoming political. Today, the newer detail is that dependency is showing up in procurement and market conduct documents, not only in arguments about frontier model exports.
The G7 and China stories in CNBC add the summit layer, but they are less actionable for a builder than the official UK and EU documents. A summit can tell you where governments want the conversation to sit. A conduct requirement or capacity report tells you where someone may soon ask for logs, disclosure, investment, or a different vendor path.
That's the builder version of this lead. If your product depends on a model, a search surface, a foreign cloud, or a vendor-managed data system, the dependency isn't only technical. It becomes something a regulator, procurement officer, auditor, or minister can name. The system design has to survive that naming.
And surviving it means you can answer ordinary questions without improvising. Where does the data go? Who can change the ranking rule? What happens when the summary replaces the click? How do you swap the vendor if the political cost changes? Those are architecture questions now, even when they arrive as policy documents.
There is one more constraint I'd add. These governments aren't all asking for the same thing. The UK isn't France. France isn't the European Commission. And China's AI safety positioning at the end of the G7 summit isn't the same as Europe's capacity diagnosis. If you build for this world, the naive version is one compliance posture. The durable version is a system that can explain itself differently to different authorities without lying about how it works.
The engineering work starts there. You can't just bolt on a policy PDF. The product needs evidence you can hand to someone else. It needs routing records and source treatment notes. It needs vendor contracts, model versions, and data retention choices. It also needs proof that the fallback path existed before the regulator emailed you.
Small correction to the word boring, because I know what you mean, but I think the evidence is the artifact. The logs and contracts move into the system itself once dependency becomes policy. They are the part of the system that lets anyone else trust the behavior.
Fair. The evidence is the artifact. That is sharper. And it also explains why these items belong at the top today, even though none of them, alone, is a movie trailer moment. They move AI from capability talk into inspectable control, search conduct and compute capacity. They also make procurement exposure and summit positioning part of the same week's work.
GLM-5.2 showed up across serving and developer-tool providers yesterday and this morning. Fireworks AI, Parasail, Deep Infra, VLLM, Alama, and Zixuan Li all appear in the source set around the same launch window. The claims attached to it are the ones you would expect people to notice. The model is described as open weight with a 1 million token context window. The launch posts emphasize coding and agentic tasks, and they point to benchmark comparisons, including SWE Bench and Frontier SWE.
This is the segment where I want to be a little annoying about attribution. Those sources are mostly provider announcements. Fireworks and Parasail have every reason to describe the model in the strongest useful terms because their product is immediate access. So I wouldn't treat the benchmark claims as settled. I'd treat the same-day support as the news.
Exactly. GLM-5.2 hasn't been crowned by independent evaluation. More interestingly, an open-weight coding model appeared and had hosted inference within hours. Local runner support and framework attention followed in the same launch window. Olama's post matters differently from Fireworks' post. VLLM matters differently from Parasail. Together, they tell you whether a model is actually usable by developers who didn't train it.
And the 1 million token context claim is very tempting to overread. A 1 million token context window isn't the same thing as 1 million tokens of reliable reasoning. It could be excellent for repository search, long logs, legal documents, and multi-file repair. It could also be expensive memory with mediocre retrieval inside the model. You find out by running the tasks that hurt: stale instructions, repeated symbols, long-range dependencies, and tool calls after a lot of irrelevant text.
There is also a distribution lesson. A few years ago, an open model release could feel like a PDF, a weight dump, and a weekend of people trying to get it to run. This cluster looks more like a coordinated arrival into the practical paths, hosted APIs, and local runners. Inference engines and benchmark screenshots arrived alongside them. That changes the evaluation rhythm for builders. You don't have to spend the first week making the model boot. You can spend it asking whether it behaves.
The test I'd run isn't glamorous. Take a repo you know. Give it a failing test with a small misleading clue. Give it a long issue history where the answer is halfway down. Ask it to make the smallest patch and then explain why it didn't touch the neighboring files. If the model can keep that boundary over a long context, the context window is giving you something usable.
And if it can't, the model can still be valuable. A model doesn't have to be best at everything to matter when it's available in the places developers already run experiments. The previous few Braid episodes kept circling fallback access and provider concentration. I don't want to replay that today. The fresh point is more operational. Day zero availability compresses the distance between model announcement and local comparison.
There is a social dynamic there too. Once the model is on Fireworks, Parasail, Deep Infra, VLLM, and Olama, the benchmark argument leaves the vendor slide pretty fast. People can test it against their private tasks. They can measure latency and cost. They can test context behavior, tool use stability, and whether the code patch survives review. Open weight models get sorted in those private tests.
My short version of the GLM segment is strong claim, fast distribution, unresolved behavior. That is enough. It isn't a revolution in the craft by itself, and it isn't a nothing burger. It's a model release that arrived with the interfaces already available and that makes the first 48 hours much more informative.
One caveat for anyone testing it: don't only ask whether it can solve the benchmark-shaped task. Ask whether it can recover from being wrong. The agentic coding claim depends on correction loops, not just first answers. A model that writes a plausible patch and then doubles down when the test fails is a different tool from a model that can inspect its own mistake.
Jim Finn posted about Empire yesterday, describing autonomous physical research with AI agents and robots. Today's source set pairs that with Odyssey's funding story, Cyma.ai's deployment tooling, Quen Hard Robot Nav, Muse VLA, and a Kairos World Model paper. This is the easiest cluster to inflate, so I want to make the claim narrower. Physical AI is accumulating a stack around the model.
That boundary helps. A browser agent needs tools, permissions, memory, and a way to inspect the result. A physical agent needs all of that, plus sensors, calibration, robot hardware, simulated or recorded environments, safety limits, and evaluation that doesn't reduce to a screenshot. The cost of a mistake isn't only a bad answer. It can be a dropped object, a failed grasp, or a robot choosing the wrong signal.
Quen-robot-nav is a good example because the abstract is very explicit about reconfiguration. The paper says agentic navigation systems need a base navigation model whose observation strategy can be externally reconfigured at inference time. It describes task modes and controllable observation parameters, including token budget and per-camera weights. Then, says an upper-level planner, can switch task mode and context strategy mid-episode.
That is an agent architecture hiding inside a robotics paper. The lower model handles perception and planning over a visual stream. The upper planner decomposes the goal and changes how the lower model observes. It's a familiar pattern from software agents, except the observation budget is cameras, history, and physical context instead of files and browser tabs.
The numbers from that abstract matter mostly as scale markers. Quen Robot Nav says it trained on 15.6 million samples and reports favorable scaling from 2 billion to 8 billion parameters, with zero-shot generalization to real-world robots across diverse environments. I wouldn't turn that into a universal robotics claim from the abstract alone. I'd say the model is explicitly designed to be called repeatedly by a planner that changes the task and observation strategy.
Muse VLA pushes the sensor side. The paper says most vision language action robotics models rely on RGB, then introduces a model that can choose thermal, audio, or millimeter wave radar as on-demand tools. It generates a sensor token and target description, turns the reading into a grounded sensor image, and uses that for action. That is a very concrete answer to a very physical problem. The camera can't see temperature, sound, or a hidden object in a box.
And the evaluation is nicely physical. The paper describes thermal-guided pick-and-place, audio-driven object search, and radar-assisted hidden object retrieval. The fetched text says Muse VLA averaged 80.6% success in the abstract, and later reports 76.4% across its real-world tasks before a synthetic data pre-training comparison. The exact table distinctions matter, but the larger point is simple. The model is being judged on whether a robot completes tasks that require the right sensor at the right time.
That is why I don't want this framed as robots got smarter today. The craft change is more specific. The robot stack is starting to look like tool use. Choose a sensor, pass arguments, convert the observation into a representation the backbone can use, act, then evaluate the full chain. It's the same agent grammar, but the verbs have mass and friction.
Cyma.ai's palette neat item fits on the deployment side. SiliconANGLE's report says the pitch is cutting physical AI deployment from months to days with agentic developer tooling. That's a company claim, so I'd keep the altitude low. Still, it belongs in the cluster because deployment tooling is often where a research capability either becomes repeatable or stays in the lab notebook.
Odyssey's funding and AWS partnership belongs for the same reason. World models need training infrastructure, data pipelines, and a path to customers who can use simulated worlds or generative environments. The tech meme item gives the headline numbers from reporting. $310 million raised, a $1.45 billion valuation, and AWS Trainium in the picture. That isn't proof of capability. It's proof that capital is assembling around the physical world model layer.
So the balanced read is physical AI didn't suddenly become solved on Wednesday, June 17th. What happened is that several pieces of the stack became visible at once. Autonomous lab work claims, world model financing, robot navigation, sensor as tool architectures, and deployment tooling are all trying to reduce the gap between a model that can talk about the world and a system that can act in it.
And the systems that matter will probably be the ones with concrete verbs in their logs. A useful trace might say that the robot selected a thermal sensor, localized the target, switched task mode, failed a grasp, and retried with an updated view. Those records will tell you more than a polished demo reel, because embodied agents need traceability as much as they need intelligence.
NVIDIA published its Blackwell ML Perf Training 6.0 post yesterday. Today's source set groups it with TSMC capacity pressure, Samsung picking up demand, large data center financing, Kazakhstan courting NVIDIA-related investment, and Databricks talking about agent usage, raising costs, and lowering margins. This is the short infrastructure check-in, because we did a lot of compute capacity work recently, and I don't want to rerun it.
The NVIDIA item is a vendor benchmark post, so the first move is attribution. NVIDIA says Blackwell performed strongly on MLPerf training. That matters because MLPerf is one of the few benchmark suites the industry actually watches for training systems, but a vendor post is still a vendor post. It tells you what NVIDIA wants customers and investors to notice.
The adjacent items make the compute story less like one benchmark and more like five pressure readings. TSMC constraints reportedly push some demand towards Samsung. Data center financing numbers keep getting larger. Kazakhstan's investment story puts compute into national development strategy. Databricks says agent usage affects costs and margins. Those are different surfaces, but they all point to the same practical fact. Model capability is being priced through power, supply, chips, and gross margin.
The Databricks bit's the one I'd keep close to developers. Agent usage changes the unit economics because a single user request can turn into many model calls, tool calls, retries, embeddings, and database queries. The product may look like one assistant response. The bill looks like a small workflow engine. If a company doesn't model that early, the margin surprise arrives after adoption, not before.
And that loops back to the GLM segment without forcing it into the policy story. Fast model availability helps. Cheaper or more open access helps too. But the system cost isn't only the model price. Serving path and context length matter. Cache behavior, retries, tool latency, and extra agent passes matter too. A 1 million token window is a feature and a billable appetite.
That's the reason benchmark wins, foundry capacity, and margin comments belong in the same short check-in. They aren't the same story, but they are the same constraint showing up in different ledgers. Engineering teams see it as latency and quotas. Finance teams see it as margin. Governments see it as data centers and investment deals. Chip vendors see it as demand for the next platform.
Over the next few months, some systems may get cheaper because the models improve, and some may get more expensive because agents use capability too eagerly. That is a product design question as much as an infrastructure question. When should the agent stop, ask, summarize, cache, or hand control back to the person?
If the answer is always, let the agent keep trying, the cost curve will teach the product team a lesson. Sometimes the best agent feature is a limit with a good explanation.
The ARIF Vant batch today is large, and I am only going to pull out a small reliability shelf. There is a deception detection paper called RIFT, Agent Cyber Range for Multi-Host Cyber Evaluation, a paper on denial of service attacks against agent safety filters, PAST for tool loop latency, a study of intent execution gaps, and pre-ACT for compiling repeated computer use tasks into state machine programs. The shared concern is production behavior, not abstract cleverness.
RIFT is the one you fetched in detail, right? Because the source set called it a major breakthrough, and that phrase needs adult supervision.
Yes, the Rift paper asks a narrow question, whether a model that lies while knowing the truth leaves an internal signature that distinguishes it from a model that is merely wrong. The abstract says deceptive forward passes had 2.1 to 2.3 times higher residual rank than naive liar passes that produced the same wrong answers in the controlled setup. The authors are trying to isolate knowledge conflict from incorrectness.
That is a good distinction. A wrong answer isn't the same as deception. If you can't separate those, your detector punishes ignorance and lying the same way, which is useless for safety work. The paired design matters because the visible output can be identical while the internal state differs.
The paper's stronger claims are impressive, but should stay inside the author's stated boundaries. They report per-example identification of which response is the lie with 100% accuracy in every tested configuration for part of the setup. Cross-family transfer with mean AUC 0.933 using relative representations, and cross-language transfer at AUC 1.0 in several languages. They also say the direction is readable, but not writable. Adding the deception direction didn't make an honest model produce coherent lies.
That last part is the best caveat in the paper. A readable feature isn't automatically a control knob. Builders keep making that mistake with interpretability work. If you can classify a state, that doesn't mean you can safely edit the model into the opposite state. The authors saying that directly makes the result more useful, not less.
They also state limitations. Small models, instructed rather than emergent lies, possible template effects in some transfer tests, and cases where residual rank can mix deception with uncertainty. So I wouldn't say we now have a general lie detector for frontier systems. I'd say Rift gives researchers a better handle on one precise distinction, hiding known truth versus being wrong.
The other papers fit the same practical shelf. Agent CyberRange says evaluation needs multi-host environments, not toy prompts. The denial of service paper says safety filters can become a resource target. Past says tool latency isn't a side detail. It can dominate serving. The intent execution paper says pass or fail hides how agents fail. Pre-act says repeated tasks may be compiled into programs instead of re-inferred every time.
That is enough for the research coda. I wouldn't make today an archive special because the official policy story and GLM availability story are more immediate. I'd keep this shelf because it names the less photogenic parts of agent systems. One paper asks whether the model is hiding something. Another tests security behavior across more than one host. Others look at attacks on the safety layer, tool loop latency, and the gap between intending the right action and executing the wrong one.
And all of those are closer to the actual craft than another leaderboard row. The moment you give an agent tools, the artifact isn't the answer. It's the answer plus the path, the retries, the permissions, the latency, and the weird places where the system looked confident while doing the wrong thing.
So that is the day's route. Governments are naming AI dependency in official documents. An open-weight coding model got immediate distribution. Physical AI is gathering the rest of its stack. Compute pressure showed up in several ledgers, and agent research kept digging into the parts that break under use. The next evidence I want from all of it is concrete. Conduct drafts, independent GLM tests, robot traces, margin disclosures, and replication work on the deception result. That is why these stories stop being claims and start becoming systems we can inspect. Lennar Kess.